discuss the other judge creative order. It was the January 3rd, 2020, and it was 8:32, I believe. And the city was in favor. Myself as Jesus.
Calculator, we're going to have to be in places after the district at some point.
result of deep state as well. So we saw students from Dr. Gandhi Dr. Gandhi going through our online programs built within bounds. Just passionate about this university. And now 13 of them almost fall apart between us, but at least about the new one legal financial constitutional entity, three separately accredited academic institutions, 15 community campuses that previously were separately accredited and now are part of the accreditations of the three universities. Roughly 16,700 students full time equivalent, about 25,000 students all in. 92% of the higher education that happens in the last year every year happens in your university. We strive constantly to be as affordable as we can be. Third most in the United States. So 47 states are less affordable than they are. Only 46% of our students get grads upon graduation, the second most in the country. And the share of our cross-river students pay through tuition fees is fifth lowest in the country. It's 28%, so 72% of our costs come from other sources. And of course, 8 of our 16 campuses are accessible by land. And if you were to transpose the last article over 48 states, we have campuses in South Carolina, Iowa, Oklahoma, and we have a research vessel all the way off the coast of Montana. So it's a big, big state that we serve. And again, for our many, many online programs that we made for our universities and some of our community campuses, we serve students in all of the places in between, students across the country, and even increasingly, our students back internationally. We have some very, very successful programs, online programs, and Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and there were deployed soldiers in the Middle East who are our students today. And we really take pride in that service to our military community as well.
Very good. Just on the issue of student affordability, my question is, the tuition increase issue with the Great Northern Empire, students of the city.
So students, they won't have some information I'll provide just a moment. We're still quite low in terms of our university tuition compared to other comparison states. The Wiki, Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education states, 16 of them. Our students who leave last of our universities typically go to university in one of those 15 states, within the 16th. So we're still competitive in that tuition. Iowa, and there are all sorts of Iowa campuses are in South Carolina, Iowa, Oklahoma, and again, we operate on behalf of the federal government, the research based breaking vessel, the research vessel, Sikulak, and if it were operating off the North West Coast in Alaska, which it often does, it would be off the coast of Montana. So, Montana isn't one, but
a push or a suggestion that you should consolidate the three main campuses, that would be like asking a state university in South Carolina and Iowa and Oklahoma to consolidate. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
Well, Chair Conan, I don't think we were talking about consolidating physically. There are plenty of universities, private and public, that operate globally. We have classrooms, we have programs available to students all over the country, all over the world, and yet have consolidated administrations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You brought up the fact that there have been recent tuition increases, and when you first came on as president, you proposed a plan that included a soft landing with the knowledge that states would be declining. And that plan included tuition increases and increases in enrollment. However, since from 2015 to 2019, the enrollment of students at the university system has dropped by 20%. And I have many questions for you, but Mike, I'll start with simply, you know, what specific actions have you taken to increase enrollment at the university? And can you explain the decline in enrollment?
Well, through the year, Senator Costello, there's a lot of information in the presentation. I'm going to make a couple of high points. Our enrollment actually peaked in 2011. And the decline has declined every year since. I think there are multiple factors for our enrollment. The first is that we are, unlike virtually every other state in the country, we are referred to as a high-income, low-education state. So we have an abnormally large number of jobs in Alaska that pay very well that don't require post-secondary education. Number two, we have the lowest childcare rate in America and have for many years. Number three, these budget cuts starting in 2015 certainly don't help. We've attributed many academic programs and so on that in just a little bit. We have 1,727 fewer faculty and staff today due to budget cuts than we had in 2015. Another factor, I believe, is the general national downward trend in enrollment. So we certainly have lots of factors, but there are national factors as well. There are plenty of publications by higher ed associations with titles like the crisis in enrollment. So it is definitely a national factor that plays into this as well. So a number of factors play into the decline in enrollment here. I mean, it's very, very concerning. The steps we're taking to address it. One is increasing funding for middle college programs. There's dual enrollments that are really out into high schools and provide high school students opportunities to study if they're working well and still in high school. Every year that I've been here, we have got a little bit deeper in order to invest in strategic priorities, including enrollment priorities. One of the Board of Regents' five strategic goals is education attainment, which is enrollment and completion. We have invested disproportionately into that specific area. Three universities just spent a couple of weeks ago laid out enrollment strategies for increasing recruitment and increasing attainment of students. The military, for example, is a target area where we've made specific investments to try to develop programs that are suited to them. Last one, so far, the country had a percentage of our population sub college or no degree. The students are able to get their jobs and come to our campuses full time. As a result, we've invested in online programs, and today we have more than 30 completely online programs ranging from AATs in education to psychology to business to accounting. All these things on, and that's why we're trying to increase enrollment. One of our colleges, though, and I don't have data to prove this, is that while our experience with organizations typically mediated by computers and technology, our expectations have increased dramatically in terms of convenience and smoothness. We at the university have unfortunately not made the necessary investments in our systems. That's not a particularly obvious factor. We have an enterprise software system that is 25 years old with a design life of 12 years. And so we're a little bit cumbersome to deal with, and we've got to change that. So Mr. Senator pulls out his phone. I'm about to call him on that. But we have become accustomed to doing all kinds of things on our phones. And so we can register and do lots more things with the university on our phones. We're taking advantage of enrollment challenges. So a lot of things we're doing. I have a lot more of those here to address this. But again, the decline started well before even these budget cuts. And it's a national condition. And the goal, again, is our number one priority.
As you said, we're going to our college, and the eyes of the day, and my family's eyes,
through the eyes and back of my head, another kind of Chancellor at Caulfield is here. He's the chair of the University of Alaska Southeast. And Steve Atwater, here he's the executive dean of the Alaska College institution. Certainly, Michelle Resnick, the final speaker from our government relations team, are here. I'm going to point that out and do a great thing. And I just use this as an opportunity to
Thursday noon session today, where we'll be welcoming legislative interns in the class of 2020. The Dr. Stevens legislative interns are super prepared. Thanks to those of you who sponsored interns. It's very important for them today. And I hope that maybe in 10 or 20 years, they will succeed in these important roles for our state.
Thank you, Dr. Stevens. Thank you, Dr. Stevens. Thank you, Dr. Stevens.
Thank you,
Dr.
Stevens.
Representatives very clearly in nursing and other healthcare professions is a growing area, and we have invested differentially there too, even though the cuts were taken. For example, last year we took a big cut, we got deeper and allocated $1 million of base recurring funding to the health programs at UAA. Engineering programs at both UAA and UAF are strong and growing. So those are two examples of programs, Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and into that, that's off the charts, being high demand for that program. So those are several examples.
Thank you.
Well, in terms of the organizational structure of the university, nothing has changed recently. We had some 1978 anyway. Last time we got hit with some pretty serious budget cuts. We continue to be a single legal constitutional financial entity, one employer, one IRS tax ID all across the state. We consolidated back in the late 80s from separate community colleges. All of our community colleges, as you know, and remember, Baltimore, were separately accredited, and those institutions were merged in such that today there are three accreditations versus more than a dozen in the up to the mid 80s. The system office is part of the structure. We serve the board and we serve a governing function in support of the board of regents. And then the second being task and performance based objective system wide services on behalf of the university and the universities. And here's a list that will go through all of the non-duplicated system functions that are provided for the universities. And in addition to that, there are three units of the system office that are largely self-funded. The University Foundation funds itself through gift fees primarily, and the management office for proceeds from land sales, and the Alaska Education Trust is our college savings plan, so there's a fee that's charged to people who invest in that program. I would note for some members later in the presentation that the statewide office comprises 5.5% of the university's budget. Strategic pathways is a process and a leading matrix or template framework for the university. So it lays out the tension, if you will, but the relationship, hopefully balanced relationship between readiness and readiness. In terms of readiness, the common mission, objective, core principles, and strategy. In terms of readiness, each of the three different universities each has a different mission. They certainly overlap with each other, but they have distinct missions. I guess one thing in common is very important about all three is that they are all open admission. All three universities are open admission. And number two, they all have a community college mission. And it's rare across the country that you would see a comprehensive university, UAF, or a research university, UAF, or a comprehensive university like UAS, also including in itself a community college admission. And I think there's some big upsides to that. I think one of those back in the late 80s who made that decision at the time, there were disagreements then, but I do believe that it's increased access for our students through community colleges to our universities at home. And finally, there are courses, programs, all sorts of administrative processes that are in common and becoming more common across the university system over the last 100 years since we went through the pathways process. So examples would be common GDR, general education requirements, common course transfer, every credit transfers from one university and community campus to another. And engineering, for example, has a common advisory council between the two schools of engineering and extensive course sharing. The math departments at UAA and UAF have common course numbers. Doing philosophy is taught in conjunction with UAA and UAAF. There are fisheries and fishing faculty here in China. There are nursing faculty from UAA in Pechigang, in Fairbanks, in Juneau, in Kodiak, and all across the country. So there's specialties of each of the universities, and there's also a great deal of shared among the three universities. So a few data points. We operate more campuses per capita than any other state university. I think necessity, given our state's large size and low population density, costs will be higher. And that's the case in other states that are somewhat similar in terms of size and low population, Wyoming, Dakota, Montana. We're the only system in the United States that combines land rate research, university, regional, comprehensive universities, and community colleges. There, where the accreditations are merged, where it looks very much like us, except for that one difference. Its community colleges are separately accredited, but otherwise, we are all one. There are community campuses with a few really wonderful and appreciated exceptions that do not receive monetary support from local government. And that's a significant difference. Community colleges generally across the country are funded through property taxes by their local governments. And that's not the case here. Again, I do want to call out that there are communities in Alaska that are very generous and do strongly support their community campuses. But that is a marked difference between Alaska and the rest of the country. And I think it's also really important to note, I made the point in the strategic path my slide, that each of our three universities really do have commonalities. We have very strong differences among them and between each other. We're getting that comparison. It's not an obvious thing. One must really dig deeper to understand differences among the three and quite justify it. And finally, here on this slide, for each dollar that you invest in our research activity, $6 comes to Alaska for our economy, but also for important discovery and research work that our faculty and staff and students conduct. As I noted a little bit earlier, we are open access and open enrollment at all three universities. I believe there's another research university in the country, or even a comprehensive university in the country that is open access and open transfer in any other universities. Our community campuses are not only originators of content, they're also nodes for learning for students in those locations, for courses and programs from other locations in the state. Our students are seeing opportunities across the state increasingly, so they're taking courses at multiple universities to suit their schedules, and we think that's a really good thing. And 10% of our students are dual enrolled, so those are high school students who are dual enrolled at the university, and that's certainly a number we hope to be able to round up. Finally, compared to other land grant institutions across the country, we only have 25% of the land we review. We're still at 360,000 acres at the moment. History, I'm happy to go into it with you individually or provide information about that history. It does begin over 100 years ago. And so you see some of these figures here, and I think it was we're talking about actual acreage or percentage. You see it's in terms of percent of our growth, it's tiny, and it's growing from there. We've got resolutions from this body, which is great, and we're working closely with voters and office now, and the federal delegation was the Department of Interior to remedy this problem, long-term problem. Give us benefits next week or the week after, but we're confident that in 10 years, 20 years, if we're successful here very soon, then there will be some serious benefits to the university. Proceeds from our lands now, the single biggest recipient of proceeds from land development is the Alaska Scholars Program. It's not a tuition scholarship for Alaska's top 10% of high school graduates every year. So we're tying back to 1867, we're tying the land grant mission right to our single most important priority. Which is students.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
As far as I'm concerned, I've never seen that other kinds of activity, so it's nice to rearrange the vectors here. Thank you, Peter.
That
factors are they U.S. as a last right? Again, we're just moving forward. So, without even getting into the open remarks, we had a rough year in 2019. But we're back up at FY20, and the latest measure has been supported and continues to be, and it's appreciated. Also, the Board of Regents has taken the helm, and I think has done great work coming out of a very tumultuous time. We have some bumpy road ahead, no question, but we've made some very strong and positive decisions on behalf of the university here over the last number of months, including signing the 3-year compact agreement with the governor, which gives us time. Still, we've got reductions to take, at least that are manageable. The board has terminated its declaration of financial independence, which really was the only responsible place to make at the time we were looking at a 41% in-year budget reduction. In light of the compact agreement, the board, I think, appropriately withdrew that declaration. The board has also taken steps to address concerns raised by the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, which provides our institutional accreditation. So, good progress being made on that front. The board has ceased consideration of a single accreditation and statewide expedited program reviews. This body, largely in the FY20 operating budget, was in some language. Asking the Board of Regents to consider single accreditation. There's more information on that process. The board wanted me to do that, but the board recently has withdrawn that ceased consideration on it for the reasons that are specified later. And I think you have material on the board's, you actually have a copy of the board's report to you on that specific topic. This ceased consideration until UAF completes its institutional accreditation process in 2021. We also responded to the compact agreement and provisions in the agreement that require us to report on an annual basis. You also have a copy of that response. The Board Governance Committee is conducting a policy audit looking to make sure that the Board of Regents policies are clear in terms of the board's responsibilities, roles and responsibilities, and those of the university campuses. And just to look at earlier, the board did dissent. Recently, to increase tuition for the next academic year, we refer to this as academic year 2021, but with the proviso that $1.5 million be allocated to financial aid tuition waivers for needy students. And in addition to that, the board has established five strategic goals with measures tracking each one of those goals up to 2025. In light of the disruptive year last year, is reviewing those goals, but particularly looking at the metrics to make sure that we've got reasonable metrics that we still stretch and are reasonable given what's happened to us. So, what are our points?
I was going to get a graduation status. You said her next year is applying for graduation. I think there are students out there that are sorry, at the loss of graduation from the year high school.
Senator, we have taken steps to make sure that we're aware of all the gaps where academic institutions can receive their appointed or leverage meetings on accreditation status, institutional accreditation, which is what we're talking about here, and programmatic accreditation. Their intent would be the accreditation for the initial licensure programs for teacher education at UAA. In terms of programmatic accreditation, engineering, business, teacher education, nursing, psychology, many others, we're in very good shape in all of those areas. Institutional accreditation, UAF just got shining re-accreditation for another 7 years. UAA last year got another with common basis re-accreditation for 7 years. And UAF is accredited. And it is going through the reaccreditation process now, and that will include concluded in 2021. The site visits from the outside peer review team will be this coming fall. So, all three of our institutions have strong institutional accreditation today, and I'm confident it will be next year at this time as well. Senator Stevens, I'll have to get that back to you. It's dozens, certainly. Some are legally mandated teacher education, for example, nursing, for example. Some are best
example, if you don't graduate from an independent engineering school with your background, some are for quality and competitive purposes. So our business schools, for example, not legally required, but it's a real mark of quality that they are granted by the various organizations that grant them. So, to highlight on the budget compact that was negotiated and signed between the board and the governor on August 13th, note that it was 6 weeks prior to that on June 28th. We had been there as to the sale veto through 6 weeks of real turmoil. Those vetoes included not only our operating budget, but in addition to that, the Alaska Performance Scholarship, $12 million tuition scholarship for our students, mere weeks before the beginning of the academic year. $6 million from the Left Education Grant. These are scholarships and grants that these students work for and prepare for and are qualified for. So it was a very tumultuous time. But once the compact agreement was signed, then a breath and moving forward. Now, reductions to take, they will be difficult and costly to it. I would note that if the veto had stayed in effect and lasted for 3 years, the cumulative hit to the university would have been $405 million. By virtue of the agreement that we were able to reach with the governor, that cumulative reduction is $145. Still very serious, but not nearly as devastating as the $405 million number.
So, that's just a way to get the demonstration. So, the legislature wants to make the government's money budget. And the governor has been in agreement with you, right? So, you're saying that if there's anything different, then we'll treat it very differently. You know, is that from my office, is you have incredibly near to the future?
It's interesting through our conversations with him, you're thinking the same way you just said, but we do have an understanding with him and the Board of Regents abided by that understanding. We had submitted its FY21 operating budget to him in the fall. It reflected the compact agreement, and that is the operating budget that the governor transmitted on to you in December.
So it's just going to be a little bit now, but I just want to make a point that as far as raising the question, so here it is.
The second bullet, those reductions, the 22 versus the 41, those are in comparison to state funding. Can you give us those in comparison to the overall university budget? If you're receiving federal funding, you're receiving tuition, et cetera. So what are those percentages?
Those are also in the presentation. Those are percentages of our total actual FY18, which is $818 million. So these reductions, the UGF portion, you're correct, there's tuition, there are many other revenue sources, and we've got all kinds of detail in this presentation. Well, at least in this presentation to the finance committee. So it's definitely a small percentage, it's probably ballpark. You could discount this about maybe two-thirds, something like that, because 300 ballpark government is something like a third of our total budget. Much of that budget is restricted, right? Whereas the state's usually money is not restricted, tuition's not restricted, but all of the research money that was bought is restricted for the specific contract that we're
working on. Okay, thank you. I was listening to a lot of folks that the size of these cuts, just in relation to state funding, they are what they are, but in relation to overall margins, it's the risk of reflectors.
Staff in D.C. and in the Department of Natural Resources for their very hard work in support of the progress they have in the Nagler initiative. And we, of course, are seeking additional cost savings and revenue enhancement initiatives. Tuition, online therapy, and additional research.
through grants and benefits. So this is our method in history, UGF ruling, and you see the red starts monospread in 2015 and continuously on throughout to FY 22. And so this red length is the backward looking, so the current year at 302, and then the subsequent years of the compact agreement. But more than you can put an amount of the technical accommodation, if you're either a cost commission, a grad school, a public and private higher education institutions in the Pacific Northwest. So, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and the board has taken a number of steps to address concerns, priorities, include weekly calls with the commission to make sure that we're in tight connection with them. You know what we're thinking about. Their concerns at most in mind. The board also convened on similar information of the group of state leaders from across the state for advice on the topic workshops, bipartisan workshops, several hundred people involved. A public opinion survey of response over 3,900 people, which is significant, often very helpful information right, but on the specific topic of increased uniqueness and increased integration. Example definition. Very interesting. There was just a split right down the essentially a 50-50 split. So I think that fairly represents the controversy that we saw play out as the board was getting that consideration. But again, as I noted, after that full consideration, the board decided to cease its consideration of single determination until the UI office solidly reappointed it in 2021, and we're very confident that it will be. The board also has directed that we adopt expedited academic program reviews, and these are underway now at all three universities. And the results will be presented by the chancellors on March 23rd. And then our academic and student affairs committee goes to work. Also, our guidance groups will be shared all of us when we are involved in these academic program reviews. The academic and student affairs committee will review those from a statewide perspective. And then we'll have some sort of workshop with the Board of Regents, full board this spring. But all of that will come to the board in June for decision. What programs continue, what programs are reduced, what programs are discontinued. Some of the cost savings from those reviews will take effect next fiscal year, FY21. However, because of teaching responsibilities and the mandate from the accreditors, and faculty notice requirements, lots of the savings may not be accomplished until FY22.
Thank you. Whether President Johnson and they are conducting their program reviews, at what point are we looking at the job trends and the needs for our workforce development in this state as we go forward?
The chair of the board of during that is one of the criteria that the responsible committee of the board reaches policy for the evaluation. And so certainly the chancellors and their teams will be looking at those criteria in addition to cost, demand, faculty, it's a quality, all technology opportunities, etc. All those factors are in consideration as well as workforce demand. Absolutely. The criteria. And then at the region level, we'll be looking at that. Again, there are five strategic goals, lenses through which the region see things, economic development, does this encourage or not economic development, does this encourage or not workforce development, research, education, attainment, and all that cost effectiveness.
Thank you.
Let's see, talk about that, budget impacts, just to highlight, there are many interviews looking at the negative impacts of our budget cuts over the last number of years here. So the short list in the same bullet is definitely another negative impact. And so program reductions, headcount reductions, more detailed later in the presentation on that. Closure of facilities, across the state, sale of facilities, demolish facilities, partnering with the private sector on facilities. So all of those are process across the university consolidation of administration, human resources procurement, all of the impact of the information and technology and many other areas as well. And that consolidation also needs to happen from the universities into the system office, but it's also within each university from the community campuses and from operating departments into Central UA, for example, or Central UA, for example. So that work is ongoing. Student facilities that you have from the environment departments. So this is a natural effect of the enrollment decline. And so we've got to reduce costs of operation. This is one way to do it.
I believe that part of your plan was to increase enrollment at the university, and instead we see it go the opposite direction. Are you polling students or surveying students in terms of why they're leaving, and what response have you received from that polling?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, yes, it is more than everybody's job at the university. So certainly me, the chancellors, and all three of our universities, every community campus director, every faculty member, and even students, some of whom are here today. So yes, we survey students. We do so periodically, find out what's going on, why they don't, whether or not they're playing, whether they're coming. The perceptions of cost, many of our students are first time. They're the first person in their family to go to college. So their challenge is financially. Most of our students are part-time. Across the UA system. They're actually very consistent, even if someone's very senior to UA members in terms of part-time enrollment status. Our average students are 18, 19, or 20 years old. Our average students are 26 or 27 years old with at least one job and people in the family. So yes, financially, those are big issues for us. Availability of programs based on their time schedule, life, events. These are many of the factors that we have gathered, and I can happily provide you copies of the surveys we've conducted because we have the numbers very accurate. And that's been conducted statewide, but each of the three universities also, because of their keen interest in enrollment, conducts its own data analysis. As I mentioned a few moments ago, those data from those surveys were presented to the Board of Regents as last meeting in January. And we'll be able to provide those analyses and reports to you.
Mr. Chair, if you could share that information with the community members, I'd be very interested in. Is there anything you could share with us about those results? I mean, is there a number one reason why students aren't staying at the university or why not rolling?
Mr. Chair, Senator Costello, I think maybe a big factor, certainly very recently, but does it decline the decline from 2011? Through 2015, as budgets were being cut down, budgets were going up, then from the state and then enrollment was declining. But I think most recently, I would say that certainly the news of budget regressions at the university was very negative. And also the threat to the state's funded scholarship programs, right, the APS and the AED, that certainly did not help. In communicating to Alaskan students that we are a strong university that is certain in the future.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the information, but the decline in enrollment is bunch of trial addresses, so I'm looking forward to hearing what the university is doing proactively to attract more students to the classrooms there.
Yes, and just to follow up before my question, which is back in time, is that I believe that that's a great accreditation that impacts the credibility of some students' shows in the teaching. Initial licensing teaching program in Anchorage did a path, I mean, it did. I'm looking here at the CDAP to get back to the River Road, at least that I know. And the Bell College was being built, and I'm thinking probably Avery School District's not taking over that, but it's still there, and you're thinking you're in, yes. But prior to the enrollment, I know our Chair Senator Stevens has been very interested in the Bell College being expanded, and I was really amazed that 1 out of 10 students right now are high school students in the Bell College programs. And there's real potential to expand that. And I know it may not be the case everywhere, but I don't remember hearing a report in our area that it's actually cheaper to have a student go through the Bell College program than to stay in the high school. So that could be a win-win on two fronts. And the other thing I love about the Bell College program is that it is there are students that might not otherwise go to university upon graduation. So they're sometimes not first generation university attenders. So I would say if you plan, as Senator Costello, to increase enrollment, you really ought to be going after those high school students. We ought to be expanding and working with our district to expand the middle college program because it's going to be on the K-12 funding issue, and it's going to help you as well. So do an aggressive plan on increasing middle college enrollment.
I'm sorry, there's yes. And again, yes, we absolutely do. We testified here in the center at this fall on the college programs. We have grown them. So we have them at the college. We've expanded them at the UAA campus itself. We also have a little college high school standing up this fall in Phoenix. This facility will be on the UAA campus that was just announced last week in Phoenix. In addition to that, we have a middle college high school, virtual middle college high school. It's been established in the agreement of the 31 of the state's 54 school districts. So those young people have access to dual enrollment opportunities. So it's absolutely a high priority for us. Our target is 20%. Colorado is 20%. We think that's reasonable here. And you're absolutely right. This is a very high priority for us. And there's more information for you on Bell Colleges, but also on our other dual enrollment or outreach program, FieldSAP is an outreach program to K-12. Despite budget cuts in the last 5 years, we've got deeper invested differentially in ANSEP to get out there. And this good way back to the Bell College High School. So high school works on records. I don't have these numbers down to the decimal point, but they're pretty accurate. Twice as many middle college completers come to us for university as the average. They're down with 30 semester credit hours, which is a year of college done. They require zero developmental or remedial education only, and the list zero. And you're right, our tuition is less than the student allocation that the school district is getting of 40% of our students. So it is an absolute win-win-win-win-win. That's where my friend appears to make the opportunity to describe more about the benefits and attributes of those programs.
And follow up to that, I would love to know if there's any way that we can help them. I'm excited to hear that from you, but other school districts so that you're working on arrangements for that through the virtual middle college. I just wondering, as you know, I've been promoting that virtual education, particularly for students that are physically located where they can be on campus. To make that as good of an experience, that virtual experience as good as possible. So I would be curious to get, if there's anything we could be helping both the K-12 system and the university system when it comes to the virtual education piece. I am trying to keep tabs on the technology that can increase the speed
expand access for students in remote parts, something we're inserting rapidly and evolving in remote technology. And the legislature needs to do it, they have to be very curious, because I think that, as we discussed with the introduction of SB6, that education is a great equalizer when students have access to things that they're passionate about and meeting the objectives of those courses. So having things that kids really wanted to go and study throughout the study period, where they physically cannot left out their campus, I think it is a game changer for the future of those students.
Here, here. Thank you. So, in addition to this, the ancillary middle college programs and the other programs before the next day were instituted, and so those were all programs that reached into high schools to generate enrollment. And really, enrollment is a means to another end, which is the success of those students in building our state's future and our economy. Those military programs and intensive learning completely online, degree programs across the state, and frankly, stepped up advertising. I don't think we've done as good a job as we need to do in getting out and telling our story. So we have got paper in order to fund marketing and recruiting so that we're out there telling that story to people all across Alaska. So I feel like they're working on this.
I hope that marketing includes that you set up arrangements with these 31 other districts that you're actually marketing to those students, because you're going to have an arrangement with the district and you're going to have students, zero students, step one or one student. So I hope that you're reaching out, because as we discussed, it's a win-win on both sides of the equation.
Okay. Well, so thank you for that, and we do want to work very closely with you on legislation. I know that Senator Stevens sponsored a bill trying to expand the middle colleges into a enrollment opportunity for the state, so we stand ready to work with you on that really important, exciting initiative for Alaska.
It's a very expensive thing, but if we're going to have a big children's reading abilities, we have to include the very lowest in all the states right now. But the fact that our department is going to have 40 teaching assistant teaching teachers who can take reading from kindergarten class, so that's an area that we really need to assess as a university to make sure we have this for medical care in Alaska.
Thank you, Senator, and that's why I'm pleased that we've got our executive dean of the Alaska College of Education here. He's really interested in that, working with the K-12 leadership at Tim Parker. Also, one of our important education leaders in the state is working also on that priority.
To show our strong support for the university and our brain power in this state. I know, based on my conversations with high school students, young people in Juneau, it really impacted their decision about whether they want to go to college last year or this year. The paths they face possibly those could be monitored. So I think, sure, we all know that is what we do, and how we move forward with our commitment to our financial, what we decide to appropriate for our universities, should be strong. And when you are doing your program academic reviews, if there is an area, that are not stationary, we're involving economics, jobs, if there's an area we're not focusing on, and I'm certainly hoping the university will bring it to us and let us know what the revenue is being in the parts and our growth, because I know we want to be responsive to making sure we get our reading coaches going. If something's a problem in the education department, technology, we need to be aware of those things, because I know we're trying to work on a very tight ship right now, and we want to be responsive to the future.
Thank you very much. In electronics since 2010, and usually they ticked up a little bit in 2011, and then it fairly continues slide since a 29% reduction over the entire period system wide. UAAs were made a reduction over this period, 28, UAF 26, and the last 37. Factors, we talked about a little bit on the way here this morning. High unemployment rate in the Hudson, highest in the country, and it's been the case for some years. Budget reductions are measured clearly, certainly subsequently, population loss. Needless to say, fairly fast when I looked at the borough, population has been declining continuously since 2011 as well. The economy of the state, made that through high wage, low education, jobs in the state. And I think also this technology point that Representative Story just made. And I think that we have not made the investments we need to make in transforming the student experience at the University of Alaska such that it is at the level of expectations that our students, either those who are thinking of coming to us, going to another university, or actually the much larger number who are in the space, not going a year, not going to college at all. And that's a big concern from that standpoint, is what are we building in terms of the state's future in the knowledge economy here in Alaska. Our tuition rates, and you see them over time, so this reflects the 5% increases in 2017, the difference between undergraduate and graduate, and then also comparing resident tuition rates with those charged between residents, over 10% of our students across the university system are non-residents. In addition to all of the other planning that's happening this spring, each of the chancellors of the universities, in conjunction with student organizations, are doing a deep dive in tourism and are evaluating the possibility of differential tuition among the universities, differential tuition between the university and community campuses. In addition, we'll be looking at fees, whether fees should be consolidated, continue to be separated. I think we're also going to be looking at financial aid. Are there ways in which tuition can be increased, but aid can be increased at the same time, such that the net impact on the average student is minimized or very limited, but we're able to drive enrollment as a result of those options and considerations. So, in addition to approval that we use coming to the Board of Regents in June, there will be a tuition report that goes to the board addressing the possibilities of differential tuition and restructuring tuition going forward. In addition to that, I would say that low tuition, as I make this point, low tuition is very competitive. I think there are public universities across the country and in the Wichita region of the state or community campus tuition, if it's compared to other community campuses. Community college addresses across the country is very high. So that's one of the reasons that the chancellors really are, I think, agreeing on this. We really want to try to bring that tuition down as we make sure that our university tuition is also competitive, but also in terms of ability to increase provision if that needs to be financial aid. So this chart looks at enrollment, that's the red line. Long period of time here, so you see going back to August 7, and this is student full-time equivalent, so we're combining all those part-times into full-time equivalent students. And then also there's tuition value, not tuition rate, but value, so rate times enrollment, and that scale is over the right-hand side here. So what you see is that through the 5% tuition increases over time, we have been able to maintain tuition revenue in the face of the enrollment declines through the modest increase in tuition rate. So data on workforce, so we have 1,727 fewer employees today than 5 years ago. And this isn't position counts, essentially it's keep it simple, just tell me how many individuals were receiving a paycheck 5 years ago, and how many individuals, names, addresses, receiving a paycheck from the University of Alaska today. And so that's the difference. So these are people, for any and all reasons, the people who are at the university, involuntary layoffs, terminations, any contract, involuntary departures, all of that is included in this number.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We spoke before the committee about the faculty turnover. From the Commonwealth of Education's annual survey of those colleges to work for, they indicated 12.3 turnover at UA. Now, can you respond to that?
Sure. I pulled up a slide here right now that looks at our average annual turnover rate from 2015 to 2020. And you see our faculty turnover rate across the U.S. system is 11% of that time. Our overall turnover, this is voluntary and involuntary, is 14%. Administration staff, you see there about 15% in faculty, lowest of the three groups. The turnover that comes from all of us is obviously concerning, but the most concerning is voluntary turnover. Right? Certainly, the budget forces involuntary turnover, but when people opt to leave, when you have to leave, that's concerning. So that's why we look at voluntary turnover over that 2015 to 2019 period, that's on 530. And you see, on average, all in, we're at 11.1%. Pursuing other employment, the lowest of these categories at 2.3%. And then you see here, below here by group, administration, staff, and faculty, and faculty is the lowest. Average turnover at 7.8%. Administration is the highest at 13.5%, and then staff at 12.7%. All of this is concerning. But I think, again, pursuing other employment is more concerning, so that's the most. We can follow up with detail at each one of the three universities. I think, again, we don't like this, but I don't believe we are out of the norm in terms of turnover rates.
Thank you. So, I actually like to do that. This is out of the norm. I think this is in excess of anything that would be considered normal. The Commonwealth of Education annual survey of the best colleges to work for showed that between 2014 and 2018, the average faculty turnover for the colleges that are surveyed by that organization is 4.8%. And you compare that to the University of Alaska Anchorage faculty turnover is 12.3%. At UAF, it's 11%. At UAS, it's 7.25%. And I think the elephant in the room is the faculty morale and why is the faculty not staying at the university. I think that the faculty staff and the quality is integral to the programs that are offered and representative story indicated how important this is to attract students, to keep students. I see these problems as interrelated, and as president, I think that an explanation is owed in Alaska by the legislature as to why it is that this turnover rate is so exceedingly high compared to other similar universities across the country.
Thank you for the turnover. Senator Costello, the turnover one is 2016. Very, very difficult. I don't know of any university in the country. There isn't one. The training reductions I believe taken in the last 6 years, there isn't one. So that's factor one. So it would be interesting compared to other universities that have their budgets cut and stably to leave. Number two, I think I'd like to break down those numbers, so I can do that, our team can do that, and so I'd like to look at voluntary and involuntary reductions. I don't believe there's another university that's laid off as many people as we have had to because of these budget reductions over the last number of years, over 20% of our faculty and staff. So we have that huge number of reductions as a result of these budget cuts. You're going to have real challenges, no question about that. And you're going to have to remember, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, again, voluntary is what concerns us the most. So we can provide more detailed and full information. This analysis was just done and presented to the Board of Regents here in the last couple of weeks. And so we're happy to do that. Sarah Costello, yes, they are, and I will need to come back to you with that specific information because exit interviews are completed, and so we can provide that. This is high level this information in terms of why and your meeting we're able to present, but I can certainly follow up with additional detail.
Thank you. I look forward to that information, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sarah. We appreciate that. We appreciate the information that we shared with the members of the
committees. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I can give you some of that information. It was our latest executive who presented quite a bit of that to the board a couple of weeks ago. You know, all the reductions by group and by university over time. So instruction level, administrative staff, part-time, full-time, all of that is readily available. We have done some analyses comparing us to other states in terms of administration instruction. We're continuing to do that research work this spring as well. We'll continue to do that. We're going to happily share it with you. I would caveat it to say, you know, that we are, you know, people say we're unique. We are. And there are no university systems structure plan plus for no UVA to us, but every community college is mixed in. Our comparatives, for example, for UVA are up in Portland State, San Jose State, Boise State, and metropolitan boundaries of universities. None of those three that I just mentioned have community colleges built into them. And when we compare UAF, our research universities, to other research universities, one of them have community colleges that are part of them. And so it makes comparison of that sometimes challenging. Nevertheless, we are doing that analysis this spring.
Because you have this number of 1,124, do you know the breakdown of that instruction versus that administrators? Because this is anecdotal, but it ties into the previous question about morale. And turnover, I have heard professors have spoken to me that they have the sense that the first accountant learns better beneath instruction rather than administration. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to that and also give us your best guess is the breakdown of admin versus instruction on like
1700. We can provide that detail to you. Again, that was information we provided to the board a couple of weeks ago, and probably there's people sitting behind me who are going to go find them. We have that detail readily available for you.
I would just say, I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that's a pretty basic thing as an administrator. It seems like if you've lost some employers, you would have a sense whether.
Administration has not as far as before. Statewide administration has taken cuts more than double the average across the university system. So we try to protect faculty as much as we can. A lot of our adjunct faculty help at the middle of the full time teaching one or two courses a year, faculty, no question. And then our regular faculty have picked up those core sections. So faculty the remaining faculty have increased their instructional workload as a result of that. So we have that complete breakdown, but it is over a 5-year period by three universities, by several full-time board is administration, faculty, staff, full-time doctor. So it's on a piece of paper, but there are probably 30 or 40 members on it. But I can assure you that administration has borne the brunt of reductions. That's not to say that faculty haven't, they have. You can't meet these larger reductions just on the administration.
Yes, thank you. We'll appreciate the information that you have seen some of it. It is hard to do comparisons, seeing what they are calling the national studies, but one of those that are usually used to reflect our dedication to trial being victimized on the construction. I'm speaking with our staff and the center of the facility, 10% and 76% going to instruction. The national studies that pick their educators from the classroom on this program. Instruction. So I'm just pointing out that we're getting different numbers for different things, and also it's important to always look at those figures, trying to get the local information also. So I appreciate you bringing that back to us.
So it's more key data. I think it's an important issue for the university and for our education community and for the state. This looks at the reports program completions over the last 3 years at three universities and teacher education programs. And as you see, and this is prior to the graduation issue at UAA, and you see a tiny UAA down 27% over this period and 16% UAF, and frankly, essentially flat at the University of Alaska and Southeast over this period. Now, these are completions. So the decisions that students made that result in these numbers were made a minimum of 1 out to 4 or 5 years prior to these numbers here. So I think that's an important point, well before any accreditation concern came up. And I think this can be ascribed in large part to budget challenges and budget decisions made at the university. Universities as a result of state budget cuts.
We'll talk about some questions about this sort of knowledge and some of the need to have more teachers to improve all these parts and maybe from outside when you go to Washington and that's gotten more revenue throughout the country. So, does everybody have a curriculum and have the opportunity later if they're going to be to go into detail with you on this issue?
Senator, I appreciate that. This is a huge issue. Our Academic and Student Affairs Committee is focused on the laser beam on this issue. Under Agent Karen Padilla's leadership, reports are being prepared now as we speak. Executive Dean at Warner and our Academic Affairs Vice President Paul Lehrer. So this is a top, top priority for the university, and we hope to return and share with you that report, our analysis of what's happened. A summary of the steps being taken to address this critical priority for us.
Are you a project, sir?
Yes, I'm hoping that report can include state cohorts of teachers so they can get committed to the program and maybe they're continuing on so we can see how many have stayed with the program, some of the reasons they are for maybe not attending the program if they are our cohort that they didn't finish with their cohort.
Through the chair, Representative Story, those data from the draft report that I've seen, those data are really there. So you'll have the opportunity to see exactly that.
Okay.
So now to enrollments. These are clearly the green line is UAA, the yellow line UAF, the blue line is UAS. The dramatic decline, certainly that's been an effect of loss of accreditation, but the decline really substantially precedes the accreditation loss at UAA. Very concerning, hence the laser focus on your board, and all three of our universities are putting on teacher education. Many initiatives are underway to address this issue. One is recruiting current students at the University of Alaska, and co-teachers, using our 1 year master of arts in teaching program as a line. So we have asked a single way to train a teacher that we have. We're recruiting students into our education programs. The educator drafting program, which is around the junior high school and is preparing students. I think it's close to 30 school districts now. I need to be refining programs across the state. So we have short-term strategies, mid-term strategies, and long-term strategies to turn this around. In addition to that, as you could, I think as you all are aware, the accreditation challenge faces UAA, UAF, and UAF both stepped in very quickly and made sure the students who were seniors in UAA's initial licensure programs were able to complete their programs this year. And there is now also stepped up presence in our two accredited programs in South Central Alaska, and reallocated funding to both UAF and UAS for increased marketing and recruiting efforts in South Central Alaska in support of our efforts.
So,
one
of the plans that we deal with at Alaska Recreation are guided to attempt to get reaccredited to UAA, or we have guided to have the other institutions pick up the loss of that.
So, it's been our plan at this point is to continue using UAS and UAS to meet the needs for teachers across the in South Central for those initial licensure programs, just as UAA meets the needs for nurses all across Alaska. So I think with technology, with the presence of faculty and staff from other universities, we can meet these needs. Well, it's there, it just seems long. I see no reason why we can't meet that. The challenge of reaccreditation, of course, really grappled with this extensively. As you know, over the 3-year process and during that 3-year period, we could not ensure our students in the UAA programs a certain path to licensure from an accredited and approved program. As a result of that fact, the decision was made by the board in the sphere of scarce resources and with the technology and the successful record of UAA's nursing program to deliver using that model. The board has decided it is for now to continue using UAS and UAS to meet those needs.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Does that answer your question? We have both faculty and the students who are in the education department and their rights to actually get to their grant reach and from the other colleagues that work on the campus. It's about the best situation some competition, but as long as our students find access to programs, basically the reason why UAF and UAS obvious to have their increase is because of the many of the students from the UAA programs that have come
in. Exactly, that's part of it. It's all of it. I think the numbers need to see some fruits of the emphasis on teacher education, the outreach programs on our campuses, and also in the engagement space. Through the Church Center, but still, that detailed information is we can happily present to you at that follow-up meeting that is being developed now. And specifically, your question will be answered student by student. We will have students who left from the University of Southern Alaska. We will talk to them about how many of them there are, how many went to UAA, how many went to UAA, etc. How many state UAA change majors, all of that data will be included in that report. I'm going to share it with you.
And just to get a question on the record for that future meeting, because we're talking about a really serious state investment in reading, I would like to know if we've been discussing plans to adjust the training for teachers as being required to teach children to read using evidence-based, science-based methods as opposed to something like whole language that has been problematic. So that we know, I think the teachers will know how the program will be ready to hit the ground running in the schools, right? That bill, of course, as we all know, is going to provide coaching and professional development for the teachers. students that didn't have that kind of training in their schooling. So I would love to know at that meeting what you will be doing as far as actually preparing teachers for to teach them to read in a different kind of way.
And for me, it's not just the teachers for me, and it's also the many teachers or grad programs or other districts to be able to speak.
To most regional 3-year bridge programs, 2K-12, lots of efforts still enrolling. We've talked about the middle colleges, ESF, Cleveland is a very successful program bridging K-12 to the university. Educators Rising Dimensions and giving as well Jumpstart program, and this is where some of our local governments, so Canada Board of Council, for example, subsidizes the tuition for schoolers studying at one of our campuses. It's been in operation for over 30 years. Bringing in rural law students to the campus, they bring credit. They come to us in very large numbers for their education to run these health education centers across the state. So this is an example of many things we do. We have faculty who are working in high schools, volunteering in high schools. We have the Master of Science Research Academy, all sorts of summer programs. Robotics programs, the list goes on and on. Nonetheless, we do have to keep our focus there and keep a strong pipeline going all the way from kindergarten through high school, all the way through our K-12 system, through the university and community colleges, and then out into the workplace.
Yes, school board knows we have the last performance scholarship and kids have to, in order to qualify for that, if they want to see college into our universities because of the commercial role, they have to do a certain curriculum, they have to get a certain GPA, and they have to score a certain level of the test for their award level. And what we found a few years ago that only 24% of our high school students qualified. And the whole idea of the ANA program was really and so we worked hard with our advanced letters, we tracked it, we had a report from it, and we shared it with the university, and then we got it as, our last time it was 24%. But I think it would be very helpful for that outreach and ask for that input from other districts, because I've seen breakouts from different schools across the state, and I'm surprised how few of our students in all of our districts are eligible for their APS. On another note, Senator Stevens, Representative Brown, and I were having education committee meeting, and they were talking about the importance of counselors making sure kids fill out their FAFSA form. Many kids, when they find out they are eligible for so much federal aid, decide to go on for further education. But they had an unbelievable number of how much federal dollars students realized, hey, I've got to help. I can go on. So I'm not sure how we can, in our local K-12 Dan Ware is here, how that can, we can emphasize more of the counselor's role in helping our kids take advantage of those things that can get them into more education, better job.
So the chair said that personal story, absolutely agree. We, one of our colleges, when we were talking with our friends at CPE about the APS, we love it. It's really a positive thing. It's one of the challenges is that students don't find out their final eligibility after they graduated from high school, which is often way after they've made their decisions. So we need to work with them to try to coordinate when we would like to recruit students. With respect to FAFSA completion, we rate last in the country in our proportional FAFSA completion. All three of our universities, I know that K-12 is trying to pick that up and really increase that completion rate because it does directly correlate to federal grants and loans that our students receive. We have, just a year or two, we've packaged another driver of Collin County's financial literacy, and so and students who receive some financial leadership training are more inclined to get a school complete. So we've created an online financial literacy course and embedded in that course is FAFSA completion for training. Data mining and advancement, that's right. Thank you for raising that because it is a wonderful priority.
Just for housekeeping purposes,
we talked a lot about middle colleges and dual enrollment, so this is what we've got going on right now. All to the good. We're going to just get the priorities this year. I think you're aware of our operating budget, so this is consistent with the Job Act Agreement capital budget. We've consistently proposed this support, level of support for deferred maintenance. The governor's budget did not include this. We asked for an amended budget to provide some funding for deferred maintenance. The governor did include $2.5 million for the Alaska Earthquake Center for purchase of seismic sensors across the state. And as the nation, arguably the world's most seismically active location, this is very important, and we appreciate the governor's support for that. And also, debt service related, we have a total of close to $300 million of debt that we have incurred over the years. And our annual payment is $28 million. And so we'll be working here this year on various options for how we can relieve the burden of that debt. It's going to touch on 400 buildings across the state. But we can provide you with that sort of detail. I appreciate, too, through the chair's hand, you've commented about the U.S. building. This commitment to our partner will also help us in strengthening our partnership with NOAA and United States Geological Service. They are also stepping up in terms of their partnership. Already exists in terms of funded research, but this will enable additional funded research here as well. So, very positive.
So, I'm very positive. So, I'm very positive.
that's sort of not available.
Thank you all very much for your support.
thanks for the insightful questions that were raised today. We look forward to responding to those and further work with you. Chair Stevens, we right now we have a 25% discount at our community campuses for seeking certain occupational endorsements, and basically we reallocate through those. So we in whole our community campuses for professional students who lost tuition as a result of that discount. And so one mechanism for addressing that would be to reallocate funds from other sources in order to cover those costs. Hopefully, if we're able to bring down those tuition rates, because often those are the students who are the most price sensitive, that we can actually increase enrollment in those programs and then bring down those student costs. In addition to that, working with employers, because a lot of those degree programs are feeding employers. And we do have great relationships now with the mining industry, for example, healthcare and others. I think there's an opportunity to step up that relationship even more so that employers are participating directly in some of those costs that can meet their workforce needs. So those are several ideas for how we're looking to address this. And then we can certainly talk with other local governments and sing the praises of the DMA borough, for example, which gives their roughly $100,000 a year to its local campus in Bruce County, Estonia. Also, if you can, so how can we strengthen that local support?
Sure. Go for it again. More about that. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Dr. Johnson, thank you for having you on this local timelines panel. So, please do remember to get together and continue this discussion.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.